Good afternoon. If you're just tuning in, you're just in time because today on Living Writers, Nandi Comer is here and you've got WCBN FM Ann Arbor. Thanks so much to DJ Lamb Chop for, I'm so excited always to hear her show as we're rolling into Living Writers. I feel really lucky. And Nandi, I feel really lucky just to have this moment with you. This has been in the works. We were laughing. It's been like a couple of years, it feels like. And definitely.
Oh my God. Well, first, I thank you so much for having me.
Anytime, really.
I feel like you contacted me when I felt like I was just like, oh, I put out a book. It's the middle of COVID. And you were like, I want to talk to you. And I was like, oh, this every writer's dream is to have someone want to talk to them about their work, right? And especially during COVID. But now it's like such a different space. It's a different 4 years later, almost to the T 4 years. It's February. So
yes.
But thank you so much for continuing to connect with me and, you know, wanting to coordinate. I think we both had our things and now we're finally here.
Yes.
Great.
We have. And it's happened. It's almost hard to believe. Mm-hmm. And I could probably, don't worry, everyone out there listening today, I won't keep talking about it, but I feel like we could talk the whole hour about this and how I could be pretty bubbly and happy about how glad I am that it's finally happening, Nandi. And you're here today. We've got your book, Tapping Out, out with Tri-Quarterly Books, Northwestern University Press. And we also have the wonderful news that you are Michigan's Poet Laureate. I couldn't think of a better poet laureate. So I'm thrilled. It's been 50 years since
60.
60? Okay.
60 years, yeah.
It bears out. My numbers are never too good on this. But so 60 years.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. I know that when we, the poetry community, saw that Michigan was going to really put resources towards a program to develop a poet laureate, I was just really thrilled that we would finally have a state poet laureate. You know, I had kind of looked around and known that it had been a long time, and I knew Detroit had had one, but the city has one. And so, well, we had one, Naomi Long Magid, who passed. But when we saw that, I remember just like the whispers, like, I wonder what it's going to be. I hope it's going to be a great thing. And then, you know, someone called me and said that they had submitted my name and that I was a finalist. And I still was kind of like, oh, I wonder who it's going to be. Because I thought, you know, typically the poet laureate positions are considered kind of like lifetime achievements, you know, usually like very much advanced career kind of poets. And I had only had one chapbook and one full-length collection. And I just really, I thought, well, clearly whoever else is a finalist is clearly going to get it. I'm really glad that I made it to finalists. And then when they called me and told me that they wanted me, I just was like over the hill. Like I was just over the moon about it. I was just really, really thrilled. And I still can't believe that I get to spend every day advocating and celebrating poets around Michigan.
And it's a 2 year appointment, Nandi.
It's a 2 year appointment.
I wish it was longer because I almost feel like you need more time. But tell me, maybe you're like, well, 2 years is significant chunk of life.
Yeah. It was announced in April, but I had been already doing some work with the Library of Michigan before it was announced. So that the end of my term will be December of this year. So. I have about 11 more months, and it really is, I don't want to try to stay in a position. We know what it's like when people try to like keep their positions and they just try to stay no matter what's going on. I think that it's important for us, especially since we didn't have one and we only had one before that. Edgar Guest was our only serving poet laureate before me. I think it's important because we have so many poets in Michigan. We're really a talented state when it comes down to poetry. And so I don't think I have to be the only one. Why would I sit there and say, why would I advocate for poets and advocate for poetry and right. then say, but only I can do that. You know, right. There's so many really great poets, really great community workers who are would be really great candidates. And so I'm really excited about the next person that we're going to appoint. I can't wait until, you know, years down the line, I can see the like line of people who've all mm-hmm. been in the same club, who have all served mm-hmm. the community, served our state in a way. And I can't wait to see what other projects that they have too.
And so with that, Nandi, maybe what is your project? Do you feel like, can you talk about that, or is that still...
Well, I haven't been talking about it. I think I told someone in the press what my dream is. So we will be showcasing, I won't tell the whole thing, but we are going to showcase poets all around the state in a very public way for folks to visually see how the kind of talent that we have. And that's all I'll say for right now. And then we'll when it finally comes out, I'll let you know and to show you how you can reach it and see it.
Definitely. Yeah. And I'll let all the folks here know as well out on the transom. So it's closer, maybe it's closer to December or so just later on.
It'll be later on. We are working right now to finalize one of the projects in the UP. And so I want to make sure that one is in place first before we start to... move through other counties.
Why is that, Nandi? Because what is the Upper Peninsula, like part of Michigan? Why is that a good place to start? And why is that an important place to make sure that's locked in?
Well, I don't think that a lot
or not of, locked in. I need to examine my language in a lot of ways.
I think I'm especially from someone from southeastern Michigan, it is really thinking about the UP is something that we just don't do. And it's a shame. Right. And so also because I am located so far away from the UP, I want to, at every time that I can, give them the kind of priority that they deserve. There's a really great poetry community. There's some really great bookstores up there. There's really great schools up there. I got a chance to visit last fall. And so I just really want, I think the UP is its own kind of, has its own unique culture. And I don't want anyone to say that I spent my whole time in the Lower Peninsula. I want people to know that I was a Michigan Poet Laureate, right? And yes. So even though it was my first time in the fall ever going to the UP, I never even crossed the Mackinac Bridge. Yeah.
What did you think? Did you dip your toes into Lake Superior?
Oh, well, no, it was quite chill. It was already October.
Oh, you're,
so no.
You're right. Yeah. I chipped away the ice and I, yeah.
No, it wasn't quite that cold. It wasn't that cold, but there were just, as someone who really relishes in nature, in small towns, I really enjoyed my time. And I think that, you know, as like a Black woman from Detroit, I think oftentimes people find it rare that someone like me would enjoy the area so much. But I really did enjoy myself. It was really just a beautiful space. And I'm really looking forward to getting back up there. Yeah.
And you mentioned like how they've got great schools up there, too, because part of the work that you've been doing as Michigan Poet Laureate is going into the schools, mm-hmm. but also working with poets of all ages.
Oh, yeah.
So young ones and could you talk a little bit about
this? So because the appointment is through the Department of Education and they manage all the schools, but also they manage all the libraries in Michigan. And so I actually have the opportunity to go to schools and work with students of all ages, but I also most of the time get to work with adults in the library. So that's been really great. When I was in the UP, I went to St. Ignace And we did an adult workshop. It was great. They were awesome writers, and they were really engaged. One of the other things that I get to do is, as a part of the Library of Michigan program, we have purchased many books to give away as well. So Michigan writers, we prioritize Michigan writers. The only time that they aren't Michigan writers are for the younger level reading levels. There are poetry books for younger reading levels, and so we just prioritize trying to purchase books for that age group. But it's been really great to be able to go give a reading, share space with other poets. I had an opportunity to read with the Grand Rapids Poet Laureate and the Lansing Poet Laureate. So it's been also a way for writers to also connect in ways that we just, you know, hadn't been able to do beforehand, and also reconnect, because I've had some really great moments with writers that I love that we've had a chance to like just get together and really show the community how talented Michigan is.
And Nandi, were you part of creating what this looks like what you've been doing as part of the first one in 60 years?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been, I really love the team that I'm assigned to at the Library of Michigan in Lansing. They have been really supportive and really open. I don't think any of them are touring poets. And neither was I really. I had known what it was to like travel and do events, but I had never put together a tour before. So, but they, as someone who did a lot of booking management on behalf of other artists, I was able to tell them, like, this is really what we're looking at. This is what people should be able to expect. This is what you should be covering for, you know, the libraries and making sure that they have everything. And so they really like listened to me. Very rarely are they like, no, we're not going to do that. So, and I think, you know, what will be nice is when the next Poet Laureate comes in, they'll be able to look at what I did, look at how I shaped it, and they'll be able to bring their own talents to it. We don't want it to be necessarily like, oh, you do exactly what Nandi did. No, we want to make sure that every poet is different. Every poet has different process and different resources. And so we want to make sure that everyone feels supported in these in this program.
And sometimes support is having a template mm-hmm. to work with. Mm-hmm. So you're trailblazing this, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. basically. So they're really lucky that you're
I've got
you're
a lot
first.
Of experience, yeah. because I've worked with so many organizations and doing event planning and doing and supporting artists. So I think I probably, you know, I don't want to gloat, but I probably had a little bit more.
This is your show. This is your episode.
No, but, I mean, so. There were other. I do know. I did find out who were some of the other writers that are being considered. But I do feel like there is this kind of position. It's more than you being a good writer. You know, it has to be somebody who wants to really interact with the community, someone who really wants to share with people and know that like you're going to meet people who don't care about poetry, and it might just be your job to still share with that person.
Try to spark or ignite a little something, maybe.
Yeah.
Or change something, because some people have had bad experiences with poetry, mm-hmm. Whether it's in school or so this part of your work is trying to show the many parts to poetry, or, mm-hmm. or possibilities, mm-hmm. or well, let's take a short break,
okay.
And then when we come back, would you read us a poem, so or two or three or four as we go along today on Living Writers. Nandi Comer is here tapping out the book on the table with us. Nandi is Michigan's Poet Laureate. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Jason behind the glass, and we'll be back.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, so glad you did. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. And today, Nandi Comer is here on Living Writers with her book, Tapping Out. We've got new poems from a new manuscript on the table. And Nandi also has chosen all of today's music. Thanks for that, Nandi. Why did you choose that one?
So I was thinking when I was making my selection, not only about what I wanted, where I was, but where I am right now. And so the songs that I chose for today's show are a mix. And the two first tracks that you played, the first song was Clear by Cybertron, and this one, Godzilla, that we just listened to. I really, like, after grad school and a fellowship, I came back to Detroit, and I had a mentor ask me if someone was to do a poetry project that really went into, like, the history of Detroit, what would you do? And I decided to do poems that really investigated the history of techno in Detroit. And so those two songs are really representative of, like, the techno scene. We listened, those are very much classics on the techno scene. And Cybertron, definitely a Detroit song. And so so one of the things that I did was I did more of more like an investigative reporter for a year. I just ran around and asked a lot of Detroiters, how do they experience their music? What did they know about techno? Where were they? Had they been on the dance floor when techno was emerging? And I also got a chance to talk to a lot of DJs and producers. And so when I started listening to these recorded interviews, I realized that there was such rich poetic language in what they were saying. And so the poem that I brought to you today is Detroit Tells Its Techno Story. And it is a... it is very little editing. Most of the lines in here are direct quotes from those interviews. And it's a persona poem in the collective voice. So Detroit tells its techno story. Let me be honest. Back in the day, I had to go to Chicago to see my music. We had to go to Europe to be validated. We were preps holding up our high school clubs. Back then, rec centers turned into after-hour gay bars. Dudes would roll their coffins anywhere they'd let them play. Social clubs, supermarkets. As long as we could drop tracks, we dropped them big black boxes and showed the world our speakers and turntables. And the people would breakdance. That was before NWA. Techno was Detroit's response to Germany. We turned Tour de France into a breakbeat. We took Kraftwerk and mixed it with the breath of the machine. Canadians tried to come over here and steal and take our style, but whatever sound they pushed out of their studios just wasn't right. It had no funk. Detroit found a way to add a break into the breath. Then computers had all kind of regular kids getting creative, and now we got all kind of DJ Noodlefinger wannabes dropping that booty like it's hot with no liner notes, no album art, no live venues, no radio personality pledging by your new hook, no way to know where you stole it from. You can hear us in French techno, dubstep, and Nicki Minaj, and K-pop, and Afrobeat. Kanye say he even got his sound from us, and still folks stumbling around the hood talking about we got no legacy. I couldn't hear myself until someone from outside told me how I looked. Until they put my picture in the paper, my mother thought I was selling drugs. I was always gone. I always came home with new clothes. My friends thought I was a nobody, but they heard my songs on the radio. They just didn't know who it was. I ain't got no computer class. I worked 3 jobs and still stole clothes from Eastland Mall, so I flew. I got on a plane, a nobody, got off in Japan, and I'm a somebody, a superstar. Came home and my boy still said, forget that dude. I had a gold record and a beat-up Toyota that wouldn't even start. It's hard to be people in Detroit thinking on another level. No matter how much foreign dirt I kick, I still got home running through me. This music passion is one of the few things that make me. Nothing else works. Nothing else put me on the other side of the planet. Not the army, not some woman, not some rich man. Me, my music, my machines.
Thank you, Nandi.
Thank you. I'm so glad to share that one. Yeah, I mean, you know, no matter what, I know that now as I am traveling through the world, traveling through Michigan, Detroit is always with me. And so Detroit just like shows up so much in my poems, even when I'm like talking about something else in the world. If I'm talking about Mexico, Detroit shows up, you know. So I didn't know how much I kind of loved Detroit until I left. And so now that I'm back, it's really hard to think about being anywhere else, you know.
For any extended time.
Yeah, yeah. I say that. I mean, I'm still one of those people that, like, a lot of my friends will say, do you still live here? But
because you've got that little bit of poet hermit in you, or
I tend to, my fascination with places will draw me out to a place and I'll stay there for like a month or 2 months. Like I don't like to necessarily visit. I like to kind of move in a little bit and then I'll come back, you know. I always come back.
Yes.
So, yeah.
What a wonderful way to be in the world, though. What are some of the places since Mexico that those are places you've been in?
Well, for me right now, probably Vermont is one of those places. I often go. I first went there for residency at Vermont Studio Center. And then after grad school, I was invited to work for staff for a year. And that was a fellowship that I did. But there is kind of a lumberjack in me that likes the utilitarianism of Vermont and really loves itchy wool. And so, but now my partner lives out there. And so I oftentimes, like maybe once or twice, once or every 2 years, I will plan like a month or two to be out there and just, you know, really reconnect. I also find it's also a place for my writing. I find sometimes it's harder to write about Detroit when I'm in the hustle and bustle, but when I have that sense of longing, I start to remember all the details that I'm missing in my space. And so I go back to that. I go away in order to get closer to my hometown.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And Vermont can be a place like that for
it's
you.
So different. Yeah,
it's so different. Yeah. I mean, you've named some of the top things about it already that define it in some ways that you have to at least reckon with. Mm-hmm. To be there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, another a beautiful natural space and interesting mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And are there other places that you've also gone? Because that makes sense in this Nandi orbit of places.
I know you said not Mexico, but I do go back to Guadalajara often.
Let's talk about Mexico.
Yeah, I go to Guadalajara often. It was the first place that I went to after I left University of Michigan. I went there to teach English, like an after college job. And I stayed there for 3 years working as an English teacher, because where I was teaching was at a private school that was bilingual. And so I don't really think of it as an English as a second language class, because I was teaching high school literature at one point. And so we were actually teaching out of American literature books. So it was really a place that I also really understood that I was an artist, because the first place I did was embed myself with the artists, the dancers, the musicians, the poets. And a lot of the poems in my first collection are a reflection of that time.
That's what I was going to say. From being a total outsider to it, but having the chance to reread Tapping Out to prepare for this moment with you, Nandi. Do you want to read one of these poems where you're embedded with the artists?
Mm-hmm.
And then, I know we've got to talk about Lucha Libre too. Mm-hmm. But there's so much to talk about. There's, and who knows, it could be a poem where Detroit makes a cameo as well. Cause there's just, as you said, it's threaded through here.
Oh yeah. 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 So, I'll read, Mama Snaps, I Salsa. So this one is, it starts off with a quote from a Celia Cruz song. Esa negrita tiene su tumbao y cuando la gente la va mirando, ella baila de lado, también apretado. Every Thursday, this band pumps La Mutualista with the clave's core clink. So I trek a mile through downtown's dim stone streets. Because in Guadalajara, the Cubans bring the best dancers, and I am choosy with men's hands. The cantina's dance floor fills with tilts and turns. Congas, trombones, and singers climb up and down their solos. Keys shaped from the pianist's fingers form a forged parentage at my waist. Here, I am La Negra, not gringa. I tiptoe in high tops while American girls and new studio pumps stumble over un, dos, tres. A sweaty palm guides me as my lopsided paisanos collide on awkward legs. My hips carve boundaries into the hard floor. The bandleader winks before he sings about a dark woman he loves and how sad his home will be if she leaves. Past the rope fence dance floor, a Frenchman pulls his Haitian wife close and they swing in their tight circle through the band's last bang. We are all migrants, our heads subtle swish, our kicks slight slant. My dance partner asks again and again, pero tú, ¿de dónde eres? Back home, my mother's radio is probably cranking Marvin Gaye dedications or Luther Vandross apologies. As she snaps on beat to each doo-wop, she remembers a dance hall man who praised the dip in her waistband and doubted Detroit's fumes and motors manufactured her worldly strut. Salsa, bachata, Chicago step, I take on each ritual dance. Adapting is a stump and blended spend. Here, I become a camouflage of rolling R's.
Thanks, Nandi.
Thank you.
A camouflage of rolling R's.
Mm. Yeah.
So this poem actually somehow, I don't know if you knew it when we were talking right before you chose it, but it did everything that we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. We have you, like this narrator that we now know is you, we can say with confidence, there in this place, this with dancers, going to where the Cubans bring the best dancers. Mm-hmm. And feeling like you're definitely part of it in a very different way, and also being aware of like the gringa American girls and these different shoes. Mm-hmm. We get to see a part of home, your mother, with a radio that's connected instead of like her own albums. It's directed right to the community, right? Mm-hmm. And then Detroit named, and it's and it's stamp on her, you. Your movement.
it's interesting. So in order to write poetry, one, you have to be able to tap into the familiar, right? But you also want to have the specificity of your own experience. But there are very few Black women from Detroit, fluent in Spanish, who have lived abroad and who like grew up a Black nationalist and, you know, all these things. And so oftentimes when I'm writing autobiographical work, it's very difficult to write from my own upbringing because I'm always like, is that familiar enough for people? Do people understand what I'm saying? And so I think that's also where these poems sometimes come from, is that they come from a space of like wanting to explain myself and hoping that someone else sees me. And so in that poem, it's the idea of like feeling kinship with so many people and how there's so many immigrants in this one space. There's the French couple that is also dancing, the Americans that are dancing, the Cubans that are singing. We're all in Mexico. And so, you know, also recognizing that there's this gathering space that we can all be, and that in the end, it's all a blend of, you know, all of us in that presence, you know. But also, I've always felt a little sense of chameleon in a sense, especially in Spanish speaking spaces, because I confuse people. They don't know what to do with me sometimes.
Which is wonderful. That's definitely represented throughout Tappe Now.
Yeah. And also, I think that when we are in spaces, we are asked to perform a different role than we're used to as foreigners in spaces, or as a stranger in a space, whether it's like you're going into a university or you're going into a new neighborhood, you're asked to, you know, in a sense, represent yourself in a way that you maybe wouldn't back home. And so I tapped into that, tapping on
it. I know, I love that.
I use that in a sense of thinking about how we're presenting, we oftentimes have to use masks in order to go through that space. So what became really important to the collection was something that was a fandom that I developed when I was living in Guadalajara. I became a huge fan of Lucha Libre, Mexican wrestling. And what was happening, honestly, was that I was trying to write about these things, about being abroad and being the only Black person abroad in very in places where there weren't a lot of people of African descent, and what that meant for someone who was trying to go out and see something new and different, and then becoming the thing that was new and different in a space because no one else had ever seen someone like me. And I was writing really bad poems about it. I was trying my hardest. I was like, no, this is really important. This is an experience. And then I had a teacher one day wear a bracelet that had all these little rosaries. But instead of the saints, usually there are pictures of the saints on these bracelets, there was like a picture of El Santo, and there was a picture of Blue Demon, and there was a picture of Rey de Jalisco. And I started, oh, where did you get this? This is really cool. And she was like, why do you know who these people are? And I was like, oh, when I lived down there, I became a big fan. I would go to the matches all the time. And she's like, why don't you write about that? And the first thing I said was, well, I think it's a space of cultural appropriation. I don't think that's a space that I think I'll let Mexican Americans, all Mexicans, write about that. I think that it's important that, you know, we honor that is not mine. And she said, because of that, I want you to keep that in your mind while you're writing, because then you might find in that space, you know, where you are writing towards that others can't. And so it became a, like, as I started writing poems about my experiences, I started to go think about mask and started thinking about that. And I am also one who uses persona a lot in my writing. So in the poems, there is a borrowing of languages and a borrowing of personas in order to execute these ideas.
Yeah, and a trying on to explore. Or it's also to connect to what you are, what's drawing you to it, to begin with as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so this is how we get the origin story here.
Yeah.
Of like how Tapping Out began. And thank you for saying also, sometimes when you're trying to write about an experience that you know is important, it does feel like the bad poems are just with you, because they are earnest, or they're something. Not that Ernest is bad. That's mm-hmm. wonderful, too. And also, I want to note, it's easy for me to say in that flippant way, oh, it's wonderful when people don't know what to do with you. You know, when you said that earlier, mm-hmm. because I think that is, in some ways, that can be a superpower, or it can be like a way to, I don't know, be alive, but it can also be exhausting. Yeah. And it can also have these other aspects to it that you've been talking about. Mm-hmm. Like to represent something that's larger than the self in ways that you're like, why? Mm-hmm. I can be one person mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. in this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, let's take a short break.
Sure.
We'll hear more of your music. We'll come back today on Living Writers. Nandi Comer is here. We just heard a poem from Tapping Out. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Jason behind the glass. We'll be back. You've got Living Writers today. Nandi Comer is here. Nandi, thanks again for picking the songs for today. This was, as well as bringing new poems and talking about Tapping Out and talking about your current experience of being Michigan Poet Laureate. I mean, so much. I can't believe we're actually managing in this hour to cover a lot of things, but there's always going to be more to say with you, I'm sure. Before we get back to that, I'll read your short bio on Tapping Out. Nandi Comer holds a joint MFA, MA in Poetry, and African American and African Diaspora Studies from Indiana University, Bloomington. She has been awarded fellowships from the Kalalu Creative Writing Workshop, Cave Canem, Vermont Studio Center, and the Virginia Center for the Arts. Comer has been named a Kresge Artist Fellow, and as we know, the Michigan State Poet Laureate, the first in 60 years, the first woman, the first Black woman. That's a lot of firsts.
I am still floored by it. I, you know, it's also one of those things that it amazes me that we hadn't crossed these off the list yet. You know, we should have had a second poet laureate a long time ago, and we should have had a Black poet laureate and a woman poet laureate by now. But I am honored, and I feel very fortunate to be able to do this. And also, I think it means a lot that Michigan is selecting someone like me to be an advocate for poetry. Black women's stories are just so, like, they really speak to a unique experience, but they also speak to a universal experience, because if most movements, most causes for social change, Black women have been at the foundation of them. And so It makes sense to me that a Black woman would be the poet laureate at this moment, at this time, you know.
Same.
Yeah.
Can you be on a board, like, to stay as part of this? To be part, I don't know, Library of Michigan, if you're listening out there.
And
if you have time, because I also know that you have your own visions and work mm-hmm, ahead, and mm-hmm. and part of it could always be connecting into community, but it's also a big responsibility to have in part of your mind always.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely will be around to support the next incoming poet laureate and want to make sure that they have all their questions answered. And so I definitely want to be there, you know, in the capacity that I can, you know, so yeah.
And then we'll see thereafter mm-hmm. if there's like,
I'm sure I am helping with the selection process for the 2025. So yeah.
Okay. So back to the poems, Nandi, with tapping out with this book, you mentioned, Lucha Libre and finding a passion for this sport. Your cover is absolutely brilliant, and the artist is someone that features within the sections of the book. Because when you were creating, do you want to talk a little bit about the structure of the book, how you created it with the opening poem? And then the images mm-hmm. and the.
Well, so the book, I think the cover itself is also like kind of the way I used to talk about the book. I would always say, well, the book is about Lucha Libre, Mexican wrestling. And people would be like, really? And I'm like, oh, but it's about so much more. And I think that's what the cover does too. There's this mass wrestler who is, that is this face that's hovering over a ring. But if you look closely, the ring is chains. And so in thinking about that kind of struggle and the kind of roots of some of the things that are happening in the book. So the book, yes. It's very heavily researched. It not only goes into the sport. For anyone who doesn't know Mexican wrestling, there are a lot of definitions in the book. I actually chose specific definitions to help ground people in the sport so that they could understand the rules and what I would be referring to later on in the section. So, for example, there is a poem titled La Base, and La Base is a term in wrestling, or the base of an aerial flight move, where wrestlers are known for these acrobatic, just beautiful. They actually introduced a lot of the kind of just sailing and flipping in the ring that we later see in the American field. But so that people can understand La Base, there is a pact between the wrestler that if someone starts to position themselves for a flight move to go in the air, the base or the person who is receiving the move has to situate themselves and stay in place and kind of accept that wrestler. They have to, be ready to catch them. And if they don't, then they can actually hurt themselves or hurt the person who is in the air. And also, no one will want to wrestle with you if you are known for not committing to being the base of an aerial flight move, you know.
So you're absorbing the impact.
Yeah, you absorb the impact. I think the other thing that I often tell people ask, like, well, why did you get so obsessed with wrestling? Isn't it fake? Isn't it? Why would you watch such a thing? And my answer to that is, like, no one asks if Cirque du Soleil is fake. And Cirque du Soleil, they do 2 to 3 shows in Vegas every day. And we all go see it. And it's all planned out.
Nothing else about Vegas is fake.
And right. But that we consider them athletes, you know, and we consider
storytellers.
We consider them storytellers and athletes. We don't think about the you know, I think that what we're watching, while it might be planned, there's an artistry to it. There's an athleticism to it. And then sometimes there are like straight competitions happening. And so what I wanted to...
And that's all present in the book.
Yeah.
Like some of like the stakes are really raised
as
we get towards the end, especially.
Right. And so I will just tell the listeners that there are other poems that really bring you into the ring where you are literally sitting there eating popcorn with me and watching fights between Místico and Terrible, and you get to see that. But I want to share this poem, Losing the Mask, which is done in two parts. It is the last poem in the collection. And just to, because I'll say two words in Spanish, one, and they're the titles of the two sections. El Luchador is the first section, and La Máscara is the second section. So the first section is El Luchador, the mask, and El Luchador is the fighter, and it's done in his voice. And then La Máscara is actually the mask voice, which I have given an effeminate gender. So Losing the Mask. One, El Luchador. When the laces loosened and gave, a cool air and calm hit my face. The ring's grasp clogged my ears. Not silent, not chaos. It was as if I'd mangled my hand on a job. I lost my face, placed my creased grin into my audience's palms. Losing my mask was like having my torso ripped out. Then I offered it, still trembling, to the winner. My face, my exposed veins pumping over my forehead. I was no lazy factory worker losing my thumb under a negligent power saw. Not a chef cutting too quickly at a raw carrot. I lost. I put on a good face, my face. I dragged the rest of my body through the arena, through warm back halls to my locker, pulled my arms into my shirt and tugged at the buckle of my belt. I dressed my body in plain clothes. I broke. Two, La Máscara. Before I let go, before they part me open, before they pull you head first out of me and hand me over to a man who will take me and hang me, before I become a sparkling medallion, a memory, a relic of slaughter, you've got to loosen all the strings. You will always have hair, boots, and tape. In a year, you can go to a mall or grocery store. You can walk through the dust of a market, and everyone will know the bottom lip and callous forehead I've kept so long inside. Mijo, before I let go of your face, someone will have to rip me apart.
Thanks, Nandi.
Thank you.
That one gets me. So why did you put that as the final poem?
So throughout the collection, there's a series of poems that are titled How Not to Lose the Mask. And there are different ways in which strategies in which, you know, characters find themselves not giving up their character. How are they maintaining their persona? How do they stay in character? And I thought, well, but that's not always what happens. Sometimes we lose. Sometimes there is the like terrifying defeat. There is that tragic moment, and they actually do put their mask and their hair on the line. And when they lose, they have to give it up. But it is, from what I understand from all the research and some of the, I've watched matches where people have lost their mask. It's a recovery time. But I also thought, what happens to like the mask? the mask itself has to, this isn't, if it's so emotional for the fighter, if you could, you know, personify the mask, what would the mask find so difficult? And the thing that I could only think of is that it would be like a motherly, like birthing, even, you know, it would be somebody that would feel both, also understand how to bless the losing wrestler, to say, because when you lose your mask, it doesn't mean that you can't fight again. It means you can't use the mask again. But in a sense, also saying like, it'll be just as difficult for me to let you go, but you will have another life after me, you know? Sort of like when we let our children go off to college, you know, it's a blessing, but it's also this tragedy that I thought, you know, this is the way that I wanted to end the story.
And you're at the beginning of the book, Nandi, you have the epigraphs from, mm-hmm. Would you want to talk about that a little bit, connecting?
Oh, yeah. And so the epigraphs that I chose Paul Laurence Dunbar's We Wear the Mask. And I also chose James Baldwin's Stranger in the Village. These are two writers that I was really thinking about. And they both speak to the usage of the mask, but they're specifically thinking about the Black experience and what does it mean to have to adapt a persona in terms of your own survival. And so, again, thinking about, this is not me trying to appropriate someone's culture. I start within the African-American literary trajectory so that it is very clear that this is definitely from an African-American perspective. And there are other poems that get into the African presence in Mexico as well. But I wanted these to be so people understood that I am not, that I also am entering into persona, that I am also not only just wearing a mask as in like James Baldwin says, beneath the black mask, a human being begins to make himself felt. One cannot escape a certain awful wonder as to what kind of human being it is. And the idea of the experience of what the black experience is, that no matter what people, what they put face forward, the black experience, you'll never really understand everything that's happening under there, right? And so I think that happens to me in my poems. There are some autobiographical poems, but I think I've read now two persona poems out of the three poems that I've read. I oftentimes am using persona as to tell the story that needs to be told too. So yeah.
Let's, because we have a wee bit of time.
Just a little bit of time.
Is it possible to jump now and leap into the present more?
Oh, yeah.
with work that you're doing now, Nandi?
So recently I've been thinking a lot about womanhood and what it means to be experiencing the world in the female body. And one of the things that's really strange is just, we wear bras. And so for women that wear bras, and just my experience with bras have been very, I think a lot of women struggle with bras. And, but also, I was just thinking, I don't usually write in form, but when I decided to write about my experience with my own body, I started thinking about how confusing the system is for actually, you know, trying to find a bra. And so I thought, oh, while I was writing, I was like, I think I need to write towards the system. And so I started to write abecedarian poems, which are poems that each line starts with a letter from the alphabet, but instead of using the alphabet, using the actual, the system, the bra system that we use. So this one is from the American bra sizing. Right now they're all just called breast abecedarian and indicating which system I'm using. So a breast abecedarian, American bra sizing, and it has an epigraph by Drake, the rapper. 36L, how many letters are there, Drake? angular elbows and knees. I was 12 when boys at church noticed them. Then I was a small cupped girl, itty bitty titty committee queen. I wished for D cups, a Baywatch bod. Instead, I slipped into trainers while Dee Dee and Shayla and Candace arched their backs. Every girl curves into the weight of a body not ready to fill the slope and bust of a boy's wanting gaze. I touched myself. I watched my mother hunch over, scoop heavy chests and stiff cones. Then it began. My slow march through each letter, double D, E, F, G, H, I, J. Each season I spilled into a bigger size. I wanted to bounce on beaches in kite-shaped string bathing suits. Instead, my size meant cheap satin, lace, and beige breeches. No pinks, no patterns, no matching thongs for girls over G. The hard, narrow straps cut at my shoulders and rib cage, or wires and padding pinched into my body. No praise for a titty too big for a halter top or strapless. Quilted stretch of nipple, dark areola, fatty tissue reduced to sex. So much of my body is a harvest of cells, or simply a spectacle. Oh, to be alone, groping their thickness, their color, their weight. I praise myself, undoing each hook, set loose my exquisite chest.
Thank you, Nandi Comer.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here today, Nandi. Nandi Comer, Michigan State Poet Laureate, writer of beautiful and important, valuable poems.
Thank you.
Tapping out the book on the table with us. More poems to come on the horizon.
Yeah, yeah.
Come back anytime.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for today, Nandi. Thanks everyone out there for listening. Thanks to Jason for engineering. I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time. Thanks, Nandi.
Me dicen el negro llorona, negro, pero cariñoso. Todos me dicen el negro llorona, negro.
WCBN-FM Ann Arbor Archives. Original air date July 11, 2017 at 3 p.m.
Okay, guys, it's 3 o'clock. It's 3 o'clock. You're listening to WCBN-FM Ann Arbor, and I have got to get out of here. But before I go, let me just tell you what you've been listening to on Ceci N'est Pas Freeform with me, Cameron. That was just Lettuce with the track The Love You Left Behind. Before that, Jay Lynn with Hatshepsut off of Black Origami, an album written in between steel mill shifts in Gary, Indiana. Sleep Party People. Before that, with Salix and His Soul and Hazel English with a track called Fix. We heard from Laser Background with Climb Hill and Noda Eris with Worth None, which catches us just about up. So, Maria's coming up next with Throwing Rocks at the Windows in Your Ears. I know that you've been looking forward to it. And I'm just going to say goodbye by hitting one of these pre-recorded announcements and making room.
So are you taping now?
I'm taping.
All right. So, the spring water. We love Ann Arbor.
Hey, before I shut up now.
Okay.
Shut up.
Okay.
This is spring water.
Yeah.